Hello, hello. This is Sandra Fidelis with the Ivy League Love Academy 2. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Erica Goodstone, who is a spiritual relationship healer. She helps men and women heal their relationships through love. Everyone wants to be loved, and so many of us don't know how. And as a licensed mental health counselor, marriage counselor, sex therapist, body-oriented psychotherapist, and personal life coach, Dr. Erica's life's work is about revealing the simple secret to creating love that endures. Her popular book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and her novel, Love in the Blizzard of Life, as well as her Kindle and Smashwords books, all delve deeply into the heart of love, what interferes, suppresses, or helps love to grow and thrive. It all begins with self-love. So today, Dr. Goodstone is here to speak to you about where there is love, there is a way, and she's going to show you how. Welcome, Dr. Goodstone.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's exciting.
So you have many credentials in as a psychotherapist, a life coach. How did you get into this field specifically with a focus on love and relationships?
It goes way back. When I was getting my doctorate, my advisor at that time was studying to be a social worker, and he was studying this particular theory, Dr. Margaret Mahler, who worked with mothers and infants in the first 3 years of life. And she discovered that there were some patterns that when a child had what another psychologist called good enough mothering, the child could thrive. But there were many ways that a child could have problems. And one of them was if the mother was smothering the child, then, you know, not giving the child any freedom to move around. Or if the child felt neglected and the mother separated and doesn't come back and doesn't let the child feel secure, then the child has separation anxiety. And the third thing was when the parent, and not just the mother, but this is Dr. Mahler studied mother as an infants, but fathers can have this influence also, and so can siblings. But the third one is if the parent is loving and giving all the love in the world and then all of a sudden disappears or suddenly is abusive, if there's a shift and the child can't develop a solid, what's called an image of the parent, a solid image, then the child ends up with something called intense ambivalence. And so during my doctoral program, I discovered I had all of that, separation anxiety, anxiety about marriage and getting too close, and ambivalence when I would meet someone. I would love someone who would be more distant at the beginning. I felt real safe when they were distant, but then that person would be distant once they're in the relationship. So I started to study this area. And my field at the time was marriage and family living and human sexuality. But I have always come back to the relationship and love because that's essential, no matter what the issue is.
Yes, absolutely. So what are the three major causes of all relationship problems?
This is something I have started to discover, and I love to ask in a workshop, you know, what do people think? And they might say sex or money or an addiction. And really, it's not quite that. Those are the symptoms. Those are the problems that arise. But the first one is if you don't know yourself, you have to know, what are my strengths and weaknesses? What do I like? What do I need? What is essential for me to have, or I'm just not going to be able to feel good and I'm not going to be able to give love. So not knowing yourself really well and your own background and history and what you believe, it's a lot to know yourself. And a lot of us avoid really taking that deep look at ourself because you choose a partner that you're attracted to and that's difficult to get, and you put all your attention on trying to win that person over or trying to change them to behave better toward you, and your focus is out there. And it's okay to have your focus out there if you are really attempting to understand the other person, what that person's background is, what their needs and desires are, what they say they want, what they're not saying, but you can see from their past relationships and their family. So it's really the second thing is not knowing who the other person is and really accepting them as they are, or realizing this is just not workable for me, for my personality. And then the third part of this is not understanding how the world works, what helps love to develop, what helps it to get suppressed, really understanding love and the nature, human nature, and how it works. So if you have a partner who's not doing the things you want to do and you start criticizing them, if you know that human nature is that the person's going to resist, they're not going to change when you approach them that way, that can really help you to understand. You can approach it in another way. But it always boils down to knowing yourself first. Mm.
So let's, I want to kind of break each of those down because I think what you're saying is super important. And right now we're talking about what it takes to maintain an amazing relationship and create an amazing relationship once you've met this person. And so what you're saying is you really need to know what your wants and needs and your limitations are in terms of what qualities and values that you really want to experience in a relationship, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So that means...
The word values is very, very important, because you can have so much else going for you in a relationship, and if your values are not the same, it can be a big problem.
Oh my gosh, it can be a huge problem. So really getting clear on what that is versus just looking for the characteristics of this person, right?
Yeah.
You know, the job or, things that are a little bit more on the surface is really going deeper and figuring out what type of person you want to be with that shares the same values and the same vision for the future that you do.
And how you want to feel in a relationship.
That's
I made
so
a
important.
List of all the qualities I wanted in a partner, and I got that, but I left out the piece about how I want to feel. It's not enough for them to have all the most wonderful qualities if they're not really appreciating you and allowing you to be the best you can be.
Absolutely. And so the second piece is really... you mentioned is figuring out whether this person has those qualities, right?
Yes. Well, it's not only whether they have the qualities, but actually knowing who is this person.
Mm-hmm.
Like not ignoring what their past was.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if someone grew up in an alcoholic family and you don't have any alcoholism or any addiction in your family, most probably you're going to have a difficult time handling that when the issues arise. Yet if your family had some of those issues, or if you worked with it or you're familiar in some way, even if alcoholism was a big problem, you may be able to handle it because you have an understanding and you have an empathy for it. So you have to know who that person is, what their background is, and what you really are able to handle or not handle.
Mm-hmm. Right, because everybody's going to come with some type of, we're not perfect, right? So we all have our issues and challenges in life. So it's up to you to figure out if that person's, what they're bringing to the relationship is something that you can handle.
Absolutely. Because if you watch some of these people speaking about love and relationships, and they say, find this perfect person and attract them through the law of attraction, And then it's like, get rid of anybody who's difficult. Well, if we all got rid of someone who was difficult, nobody would be in a relationship. It's ridiculous. And just because someone has an addiction or someone is not making money and loses their job or they're not educated, that doesn't make them, or they're overweight, that doesn't make them someone who can't be in a relationship. It's just that you have to figure out what you can accept, what your basic needs are.
Mm-hmm.
The
Absolutely.
Most important, yeah.
And whether this person matches those needs.
Right.
Right.
And so, wait a second, and whether you match their needs too.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
they could be perfect for you, and you say, oh, but we're so perfect for each other. But if that person has a different desire or a different dream of what their partner should be like, you know, you can't force it.
Right, and you may not match their values. And so the third major cause, can we review that one more
sure.
time?
Sure. The third one is, not, it has a few parts, not understanding how the world works.
Mm.
For example, like we have little sayings like that, it never rains but it pours. So if you are coming from a needy place, like you haven't been on a date in a while or you haven't had someone you love and you find someone and you need them and want them, that person is going to naturally be pulling away, no matter how they started out with you. So understanding that when you come from a place of confidence and fullness and you don't need someone, they're going to be more attracted to you.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, there's another saying, fake it until you make it. Sometimes it really pays to act confident and act as if you know you don't need them so badly, even when you really feel needy. That's a hard thing, because there's also a part that says, just be real. But at the very beginning of a relationship, in the first few minutes and the first few hours or weeks that you get to know someone, all they know is what you tell them and what they find out about you at the beginning. So if the first things they know about you are that you're needy and you're insecure and your last partner cheated on you and stuff like that, that's going to taint how they feel about you. As opposed to if the first few things they hear about you is that you have lots of relationships and you're busy and you're out there and you want love but you're not clinging to anybody. If that's the image they have of you, it's a lot easier for that person to continue and to start to care about you.
So you mentioned something that I want to go back to, and that is basically like, you know, have a life, right? Have a life and do your own thing and don't feel the desperation energy is a repellent to a person who's, you know, healthy and can give you can engage in a healthy relationship.
Yes, you made a good point that desperation might be appealing to someone who's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who wants to control another person, someone who wants to abuse another person, they might love it that you are needy, and they might treat you so well at the beginning because they can win you over and then slowly pull you in and be abusive. So it's real important to develop your own confidence and find the people and places to go to and be around that support you.
Now, I know that there are many, many women listening who have been through a divorce. But when they are dating, should they be looking at if they meet a man who's also divorced recently separated, should they be kind of looking at what went wrong in the previous relationship? As you know, a guide as to what this person is kind of like?
I would say you really need to look at everything, because people exaggerate the situation.
They sell themselves, right?
Right, they're selling themselves, so they're making that, I'm talking about a man right now, making his ex-wife out to be the worst person in the world, stealing from him, taking everything, but he's not talking about the way he's mistreated her and the fact that he cheated on her, you know, or whatever went on. So you really need to give a relationship time. I was at my health club, and I almost laughed that this person said she had just recently gotten divorced, and she met a new guy, and she said, oh, he's wonderful. He's texting me every day. And I was laughing. I mean, she had just met him. She doesn't know anything about him. Anybody can be texting and romantic for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, or a couple of months. But if you give it a year, and you have good feelings through that whole year, and you meet the family and the friends and other people, and they say things that support what you're seeing, you have to be looking at what are other people saying and doing also.
That's an interesting point.
Like a friend who subtly makes some comment like, oh, you're so good for him because, you know, he can be really difficult. Just any little comment. Don't take it lightly. Really explore and see what did that person mean, someone who knows him better.
So what are some different questions that can be asked to help those listening to create a more loving relationship?
Well, I've discovered that instead of asking at the beginning, why is this happening, how can I make it better, when can we get married, and who should I be with, or where should I go to meet people, all of that, instead ask what. Like, what is it that I want? What is it that this other person wants if I have met this other person and I'm starting to get involved? What can I learn from this person? And what can I teach that person? What can I give to the person? What can I receive? There's a balance in each of those. If all you're asking is, what can I get? And what can I learn from that person? And what can he give me? And what can he do for me? That's all one-sided. Really, and I don't mean just giving in terms of financial giving. I also mean in terms of expressing yourself. If another person is shy, maybe you can be the one to help open that person up and they'll be more expressive. So that's what I mean by giving and sharing and teaching. So it's really not just what can I receive, but what can I share and give. And then after you've looked at all the what's, so you're not so focused on the emotional part or any kind of blame, and this is not only when you first meet someone, this is also when you have a crisis that occurs. You can always start by asking, what is going on? What is happening? What would I like to see different? And then start asking, why did it happen? And how can we make it better, etc.?
So basically what you're saying is that the causes of relationship issues are really people getting together and not really being a good match for each other in terms of values and compatibility, and then also not understanding how to coexist with one another.
I'm not exactly saying they're not a good match for each other, because just because the person appears to have different values, there is something that attracted you, and that's an important thing to look at. What is it that brought the two of you together? There's something in your family dynamics and early childhood upbringing that does match, or you wouldn't find each other. If you met somebody who had different values from you, and, you know, there was nothing matching your background or your needs, you wouldn't feel an attraction. You would continue the relationship. So if you're attracted and you're continuing it, there's something that person can offer you. Even, for example, if that person, I don't know, has a big illness and you have to take care of them when you thought they were going to take care of you, maybe that was a lesson you needed to learn, to have compassion, to take care of another person, to be independent. So it's a little more complex than just saying this is the wrong match. People do that. That's why they get divorced three times, four times. You know, they find a new partner. They're always getting rid of the person because it seems as though it's not compatible. In any spiritual tradition, they will say, you know, look at yourself first. Connect to your own spirituality and your own being first. And then the person is really a mirror for what's going on with you.
Okay. So let me ask you this. If you are, you know, if you are somebody who really is not into drinking or doing drugs, or, you know, you kind of live, you know, a pretty mellow life, and, you know, you're responsible financially and all that stuff, and you attract somebody who's the opposite of that, right? You're saying that there's something in the early childhood family dynamic that attracted you to that person in the first place. But then at the same time, that would be somebody who's not compatible with you because you don't want that, right?
You may not want that, but unless you work out the issues that make you feel that attraction, like that's where counseling and therapy comes in as opposed to coaching, to really go into some sessions and look at your life and evaluate your life, because if you don't do that, you're only going to be attracted to the same kind of person over and over again. And if you marry a person who does match your external values, what you think you value, and you don't feel that passion, there's a good chance that you're going to end up having an affair or just being unhappy and not feeling the sexuality, so you're going to make the relationship less happy than it can be because there's a piece of you that hasn't been satisfied. So it's not that the person, it's not so much about the drinking or not drinking or drugs or no drugs. It's about something in that person's personality. Like if your father was what you consider manly and he was aggressive and put down women or whatever his issue was, then you may seek that out in another person because you, in unconsciously or subconsciously, you believe that's a strong man. And a man who doesn't put women down, who's just loving and thinks equally, you may see that as a weak man. So this is why it gets complicated. And that's where talking and looking into it and giving the relationship time, then you start to evaluate what's going on here. How much am I contributing to whatever the problems are? Is this workable or isn't it?
Okay. So most of the couples who come see you, who come to, you know, get help from you and feel that their relationship is falling apart, what is it that you work with these couples? Do you, you know, take them individually? Do you do couples counseling and try to do this type of work in your practice?
Well, I do a combination. Usually with couples, I see them together for an intake session. So I see them interacting with each other. Sometimes one person comes first, but if one person comes, I don't usually see that person alone several times because then it could be very threatening for the other person to come in. Usually I would see them once or twice and then the partner comes in. But usually it's together first where I see the interactions and they get their stuff out. And then I see each one separately, usually for two sessions. One session is just traditional counseling. And then if they're receptive and willing, I do a type of mind-body therapy. I'm trained in a wide variety of body therapies, and I do have a massage license because I touch people, but I don't do regular massage. Nobody gets undressed, and it's not for the muscles. It's emotional opening up type of body work. You hold certain emotions in your body, and you hold your body in a certain way when you're sitting, like you can be holding your shoulders up and holding your breath and sitting a certain way or standing a certain way. When you lie down on the table, and I'm also assisting you to relax with the gentle body work, it's called the Rubenfeld Synergy Method, and also some craniosacral and polarity therapy, and a few other techniques that I've learned over the years. But I'm doing this gentle body work, and your body is relaxing. And as you relax and you breathe deeply, you get to a deeper issue, the truth of what you really feel. So like one person expressed he had an issue with sex, with a problem with sexuality. And when I went to just gently touch his stomach, he couldn't allow someone to touch the stomach because there was a real trauma that happened that I would not have gotten if we just talked in a session. And so it goes on like that. People open up to what's really going on, what their real fears are, the memories of something that happened in the past that this partner is triggering. And sometimes when the couple is receptive, I'll have both of them in the room and one person on the table and the other one assisting. So they hold the feet or the partner's head, and there's such a sense of intimacy that occurs because they're really hearing what the partner may have said in other times when they were defensive, but now they're hearing it when the partner is vulnerable.
That's beautiful.
And one time it even happened that one person refused to get on the table, but the other one was on the table, and it turns out the one that was sitting on the chair actually had the session, because he had a real issue with touch that he didn't realize. And another thing that I've discovered with this body work, someone who's been abused needs absolute careful touching. You have to start from a distance. You don't break through the energy field. You give that person power and respect and let them decide, is it okay? And in sexuality, what people do is they break through the energy field too soon. And especially with someone who has had abuse, they're much more sensitive and they block very easily. So the body work can help somebody to open up, to trust and to open up in ways that is surprising to the person. They may not even realize that those feelings are stored in there.
So what is a recurring theme that, you know, keeps coming up in most of you know, the couple work that you do? Like, what is one of the bigger issues that they face?
Somebody feeling, maybe both people feeling that the other person just doesn't love them, doesn't appreciate them, or isn't doing what they think the other person should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at the other person, and I've seen it a lot that two people come together for a session, and then the other one of them won't come for future sessions, or just comes for a few sessions, and then says it's her problem or it's his problem. And it's never, even if that person appears to be the one with the problem, if you chose that person as a partner, then, you know, the problem is both of you. A relationship requires both people, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. So what's the remedy for that, for somebody feeling like they're just not heard or cared for or loved enough, or, you know, they just are not getting what they need in the relationship?
Well, the remedy, first of all, is that the person has to be willing to go through some emotional pain. The person has to be willing to look at him or herself. Daniel Amen has written these incredible books about the economy and business, and one of them is called Drive. And he talked about what motivates people in business. And there's a new philosophy in the workplace. And one of the things is autonomy. So I started to realize that, and it's three things. I started to realize that his theory for business applies to relationships. So in order to have this drive to work on the relationship and to make it better and to last, you both have to feel a sense of autonomy that, you know, you can function on your own. The other person's not squelching you, or they're not too distant and avoiding you. And the second thing you have to develop motivation. And we're all motivated when we first connect because the hormones are flowing. You're so excited, the hormones that bring about attraction and sensuality and dopamine and serotonin, these wonderful feelings, and then oxytocin, which bonds you. But after some amount of time, you're home doing dishes, your partner's away at work, they come home tense, they lose their job, you're frustrated because you're not working and you'd like to be, or you're not happy in the work, whatever the issues are, the sex isn't as going as well. So then there's this period of time, and it can be a long period of time, where there's struggle. And Daniel Amen talks about a quality called grit, G-R-I-T, grit, where you're willing to stick through the difficult times, which many, many people are not. And for counseling and therapy, you have to be willing to stick through those uncomfortable sessions when you feel like you're doing everything wrong, when everything you thought about the partner wasn't quite right, or your partner says things like, God, I'm giving up, I want a divorce, but they may not really want the divorce. It's just they needed to express it, their frustration. And if you're willing to sit through that, and if you, as a couple, have a purpose, that's his third piece, that you need a purpose that works for any kind of business arrangement and it works for relationship. If you have a purpose together, some people the purpose is bringing up children. Other people the purpose is to create a life where they can be together till the end. And so that's an important piece, that what creates that drive and motivation for couples.
Well, when you explain the three major causes of relationship issues, I think that for those listening, if you pay attention to those three things, it'll make the journey much easier, right?
Absolutely. And there's another piece in relationships. We can't help this. It's really important not to listen to the media and your friends and everybody about your relationship and your family. They may want what's good for you. They may not want what's good for you, but none of them are you.
Yeah.
And you have your own unique needs. And you may be married to someone who's really difficult, even verbally abusive, for example, but you love that person and you know that there's something more there. So just because it seems like the right thing to do is get rid of that person, you may not have cared for other people. This is the person you're choosing. So you need to strengthen yourself as much as possible, know what you can tolerate, what you can't, and keep taking a stand for what's good. The other person, eventually, if you're not blaming them and picking on them and pointing at them, and you keep getting stronger and more loving, they may just eventually give in and soften, because they'll see that it works. And maybe they'll see that those old tactics they had don't work.
Dr. Goodstone, you have a product that you have discounted for our speaker series, and it's the 30-day love challenge, and it's a way to go further with your work. So I'd like for you to share that with everyone, if you could, please.
Sure. I've taken many challenges. I wrote a novel in 30 days with the NaNoWriMo, National November Writers Month, and because I was part of a group, it's an international group, and I went online and I saw the statistics of how everyone was doing, and beforehand we had a little meeting locally, and afterwards we had another little party, and we signed a little commitment paper. All of that helped me to write a novel, which I had never written. I just got into it, and I kept doing it every day a little bit, and it got completed. So that's only one challenge. I've taken many challenges. I was in a challenge to walk 365 miles in a year, and that got me really exercising more than I had been before and doing it, and I've continued that one. And I've been in a 30-day blogging challenge, a 100-day article challenge. So I've done a lot of challenges, and I know that they work because you're focusing on that topic or that area for a limited amount of time. It doesn't mean you have to stop after 30 days, but by focusing and knowing other people are involved too, and you have a Facebook group, you know, and you really have connections, it can transform it will transform the way you look at love and relationships. And I found, even as I've been creating the course, I found myself reaching out more and feeling more loving and attentive to waiters and waitresses and traffic, people in traffic or wherever, because I was focused on love. The more focused you are, the more it will come to pass.
Ooh, I love that. And what is the price that you're offering that at?
It's at the price of $99. It's really a bargain because it's going to be much more in the future.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for offering that at a discount for our listeners. We're going to have that's. It's actually on the webcast right now if you guys want to take a look at that offer. We're also going to have it on the replay page and the replay email for you guys.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was 97 or 99. Sorry, but that's the price range.
Okay. So, Dr. Goodstone, if you could just wrap it all up and tell our listeners one thing that they need to know about making sure that once they do find the person that they want to be with, that they can maintain that bond, that love, that connection, what would that be?
Whoa, I want to say 10 things. Like one, I have to say a few things. Know that person's language, their love language. You can look up that book of the 5 love languages. Love everyone unconditionally, especially yourself, to really find a way to love people. Doesn't mean you have to be with them and condone what they're doing, but find a way to love them. Get your ego and your narcissistic needs out of the way. And love also requires a lot of elements: courage, discipline, taking action, faith, and really the most important thing is to hold a vision of what you want and then allow whatever's going on in the present moment to be there and just keep holding that vision of love between you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Goodstone.
You're welcome. It was wonderful speaking with you.
Everybody, we will see you tomorrow on the Ivy League Love Academy 2, and please stay tuned for your dedication. Bye-bye. Close your eyes if you're able to, and bring your attention to the present moment. Take a deep breath. This is my wish for you. I wish you the type of love that reflects back to you how amazing you really are. I wish you perfect health. And I wish you an abundance of energy and resources that will allow you to experience your greatest desires. And so it is. Big kiss to you, my love. I'll see you back here tomorrow.